you get this mentality that you're just simply untouchable because of what you've done, where you've been, what you've accomplished, and what you represent.
That was West Virginia attorney Rusty Webb talking about the Bob Huggins resignation situation. A lot to unpack there for sure, which we're going to get to soon. But first, just welcome to Crisis Communications and Sports. My name is Jim Rocco, here as always with Chris Bruce. Chris, I think the word for that whole Huggins situation is bizarre, right? That's what I just keep coming back to.
Jim, I think bizarre would be an understatement. So it's definitely crazy.
Yeah, it sure is. So we have a really good conversation with Rusty coming up shortly. But first, Chris, let me just ask you something. What is your take on this situation going on with NFL running backs right now? Basically, what's happening, it seems like, is there's this very odd thing going on strictly by position in the NFL. And it seems that what they're collectively doing, these running backs, is trying to sway public support with statements and social posts. And I'm not so sure if it's working. What's your take on that?
Yeah, I'm not sure it's working either, but you know, this is definitely not something new, as we've been seeing athletes use social media as a negotiation ploy for some time now, whether it's the running backs or Lamar Jackson or even a few other guys like Damian Lillard. I just think it's a new medium for guys to, you know, get their word out there, get their side of the story, and try to put some pressure on the organization. I don't really think that works. Because, you know, the GM, I don't think, is too worried about what Pam in Wisconsin thinks or what Michael in New York thinks, more so with the direction of the team. But, you know, I applaud them for doing it. It's, you know, what else do they have? They literally have no other leverage, so they might as well try to use the court of public opinion as some type of weapon.
Yeah, they definitely are. And I think where they might be a little bit misguided is that it's probably fair to say that the NFL, like other sports leagues, is more of the fan base is more pro player than they are pro management. And maybe the running backs are sort of counting on that. But I think, you know, fans have gotten more savvy. And I think in this case, they probably aren't really siding with the running backs. I don't know if it's the fantasy football effect or they sort of get the other side now, but it seems like they sort of get it for what it is. Would you agree with that?
Yeah, I mean, also, it's obviously hard when you're talking about millionaires complaining about getting paid or being, you know, underpaid, right? You got to think about that aspect. But not only for the fans, but when players put such things out like that, you have guys on ESPN and Fox Sports who used to play and who has relationships with these guys and their families and their teams, who also can speak to their benefit and kind of put out the narrative that they have been doing wrong as well. You know, it's like a brotherhood once you played in these sports leagues. So it's almost like, yeah, the regular guy wouldn't understand, but I understand you, so I'm going to take up for you, right? It almost seems like that's just happens every single time. So there's a lot of actors and a lot of moving parts within these athletes speaking out on social media in general. So,
yeah. And it'll be interesting to see over the course of the next couple of weeks how this plays out. Obviously, training camps will start up at some point and some guys might be missing. But I would tend to think that the team seem to have the leverage at this point. Maybe not. You know, it's not that the position isn't important anymore. And I don't want to get too much into the team aspect to it, as opposed to the public relations part of it. But I think as we have spoken about separately, I think the running backs are going to probably need to adjust their skill set a little bit. Is that about right?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, I think the angle that they're putting out on social media is that the running backs is one of the most important position, yada, 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 which, listen, I think that is the case. It still is one of the most important positions, but I think they're taking the wrong angle, for the simple fact is it's an important position, but what they're not telling you is that they're easily replaced or there's cheaper options. So whenever that's the case, it's obviously going to be hard for you to command a certain type of salary.
Yeah, and let's face it, the game changes. It is absolutely a fact that it's more of a passing game now than it was years ago. Just the way the NBA is not as reliant on the center position as it was years ago. So there's always an evolution in sports. And I think what's going to end up happening here is that the star running backs are going to have to not just adjust their skill set, but also their way of thinking as far as what the position demands and consequently what salaries they deserve.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, we already seen it this year in the draft with Bijan Robinson going to the Falcons, right? They say he can play slot receiver and he's a running back. So it only makes sense that if you want to get paid, then you're going to have some type of tendencies or skill sets of a receiver to command that, as well as running the ball as well. Because, I mean, if you look at the last few Super Bowl champions in recent memory, I can't think of one with a superstar running back. Most of them was done by committee, which even, you know, lessens their value. So...
yeah, yeah, no, indeed. That's certainly where we're heading with this. But before we get to the conversation with Huggins, we also just want to turn things over to our new sponsor, Heart and Harvest Press.
This episode of Crisis Communication in Sports is sponsored by Heart and Harvest Press, an independent publisher of groundbreaking books in the field of communications, business, and narrative nonfiction. This fall, Heart and Harvest will publish Sports Crisis Communications, Cases and Controversy by communications experts Jim Rocco and Tom Weidlich. 2023 will also see the publication of the 20th anniversary edition of In the Court of Public Opinion, Winning Strategies for Litigation Communications, which Financial Times called the perfect handbook for this age of show trials. And check out the just-released Heart and Harvest edition of Chief Crisis Officer, Structure and Leadership for Effective Communication Response, with a provocative new preface on the COVID-19 crisis and Russia's invasion of Ukraine. Visit us today at heartandharvest.com.
Our guest today is Rusty Webb. He's an attorney, legislator, and influencer who has spent over 30 years serving the state of West Virginia. As the son of a coal miner, he quickly established himself throughout the state as an advocate for working class people. Rusty earned his Doctor of Jurisprudence degree at West Virginia University's College of Law, where it's worth noting he was a member of the university's crew team. Rusty, thanks for joining us today on Crisis Communications in Sports.
It's a pleasure to be here.
Great, great. Okay, so this Bob Huggins story, which I'm sure is near and dear to your heart, just want to get some people who might not be totally familiar with the story up to speed with a few of the facts. So Huggins, of course, is a legendary West Virginia basketball coach, over 900 career wins in the Naismith Memorial Basketball Hall of Fame, and wildly popular among the alma mater from the school, even nicknamed Huggy Bear. So now, back on May 10th, Huggins was suspended and given a significant salary reduction based on some anti-Catholic and anti-gay remarks he made on a radio show. Did manage to save his job and weather that storm. However, a little bit more than a month later, on June 16th, he followed it up with a DUI he received in Pittsburgh, where he was, three times over the legal limit. So at that point, what happened the next day is what we're going to talk about today. So on June 17th of this year, he issued, or at least we thought he issued, his resignation to the university. Turns out that he claims that never happened, but he claimed it more than 3 weeks later. And the news had already been out there, widely reported, said that, listen, that was just based on a text my wife sent. And the university said, we didn't just base on that. We emphatically deny that. And I think public sentiment largely felt, and we'll get your thoughts on this, that it was just very bizarre. And that even though as popular as Huggins is, people just sort of thought, like, this is so out of left field, I just can't buy it. But if you could give us a sense of not just that, but also what Huggins has meant to the West Virginia community for people who aren't from the region or didn't go to the school.
Well, of course, he's a native West Virginian, and he was the highest paid state government employee in West Virginia. He was just above West Virginia University's football coach, and considered probably a deity here. I mean, he walked on water. He had he would have a fish fry every year, and the money would go to cancer research in Morgantown. He would bring in either a Big 12 coach or some high profile celebrity, basketball celebrity, to come in and attend that with him. And it was hugely successful. He's the face of West Virginia University basketball, and in many ways, the face of the state of West Virginia. I mean, he was by far the most popular coach in West Virginia. And so in with that as a background, he had support after the first incident. He had a lot of support because he has loyal fans and supporters. I mean, they literally would take a gunshot for him.
Right.
And so they were loyal. And then West Virginia University reacted to that loyalty by keeping him as coach and, you know, the conditions that you set forth earlier and required some sensitive training and reduced his salary. But then when he was found in Pittsburgh and thought he was in Columbus and that bizarre incident, I think at that point, West Virginia University really had no choice but to terminate him, or to, I guess, discuss, and they didn't terminate him, he resigned, discuss him leaving the university under, you know, some circumstance. So he ultimately resigned. And even during that episode, West Virginia University fans were waning, but still thought, you know, give him another chance, give him another chance, give him another chance. And he had that support until the letter came from his new counsel. He retained counsel that it appears he'd never used before. He'd used a couple lawyers in West Virginia for his contract negotiations and for, you know, any issues that popped up. This was a new firm out of Columbus, I believe it is. Out of Cleveland. And when they wrote the letter to West Virginia University after Huggins had told his players he was leaving, submitted the message from WVU's press release, then WVU issues a press release. He clears out his locker, so to speak, clears out his desk, clears out his office, gives up his passes, gives up his cars. Then this came out of like left field for West Virginia University, because even at that time, it's my understanding, even at that time, had he gone through some treatment, I think he was still going to play somewhat of a role at West Virginia University, maybe as a senior ambassador or goodwill ambassador. I think there was still some goodwill there. But once that letter came from the Cleveland law firm, then the light switched off as far as support. No support from WVU, no support from supporters, no support from fans. I mean, it completely went black for him as far as his you know, special treatment that he had enjoyed for all these years. So West Virginia University, basically in the letter, the law firm sets forth all the factual and legal reasons that they say that he did not resign. West Virginia University then fired back a letter to the law firm that outlines every fact and legal basis by which he did resign. And then contemporaneously with all that, I believe in an effort to try to get support back from his base, he issues a press release, and it fell pretty well flat. I don't think it got him anywhere. Right now we're in this sort of, it's either over or it's the calm before the storm. I don't know. Nobody knows which.
Yeah, it seems though that even after this incident, it seems that people were still loyal to him, obviously, before the letter was sent off. But I'm just curious. So the previous controversy with him with the radio interview, do you think those comments played any role in the split at all, specifically with regard to the credibility? Or do you think, as you previously said, these people were still loyal? It didn't really matter too much, because it seems like, yeah, he had those questionable comments. Yeah, he got caught with a DUI, but people were still with him until the letter surfaced and was sent.
What I'm saying is with each event, he lost support, but he still had substantial support. I mean, you have to have followed him and in West Virginia to know that some of these fans would still bring him back. I mean, some of them would still say, hey, let's give him three chances, you know, and in West Virginia University, it appears, and I don't have any insight with them, I haven't spoken with anyone, is, you know, fool me once, shame on you, fool me twice, shame on me. So they, you know, like I'd say that at most universities, coaches would have lost their job after the remarks on the radio.
Absolutely.
But because of his support here, West Virginia University found a way to punish him and to, you know, to allow him to take sensitive training classes, to get with the LGBT community and mend those issues. And he's, that was the road he was on. The DUI, you know, the following DUI in Pittsburgh, you know, again, lost more support. But at this point, West Virginia University, I don't think had any choice but to discuss with him either a resignation or a termination. And he ultimately resigned. And but to this day, you will find a handful of West Virginia University fans and supporters who would say he needs another chance. I mean, that's how well loved he is in the state, and he just. That's the best way I can put it.
Yeah, no, that makes sense. I mean, you could see the type of gravitas he has, which begs the question, Rusty, do you think that he's just listening to bad advice? Or do you sense that, I think, and you alluded to this before, is he severely underestimating either his how far reaching his popularity is, or that he could just weather any storm? It's almost like he sat at home for a couple of weeks and said, I should have stuck it out. Like, is that your sense?
I have a couple of comments. One, during this process, the attorneys that he usually relied upon for advice advised the university that they were no longer representing him in this issue. So you could speculate that they may have given him advice that he didn't like, but I wasn't there. I can't say that that's what happened, but they did made it clear that they no longer represented one continues to represent him in his criminal matters in Pittsburgh. Number two, as you know, at this level of coaching or pro sports, or even now college sports, you're untouchable. You get this mentality that you're just simply untouchable because of what you've done, where you've been, what you've accomplished, and what you represent. And that's just not Bob Huggins. That's, you know, all these big time coaches.
A lot of those, sure.
And big time players and you know, big time college players now. So there is probably that sense of entitlement that, you know, it's almost like the stages of grief. You know, you're sad one minute, and the next minute you're like angry because, you know, why did they ask me to do that? You know, because I've done so much for them.
Yeah, don't they know
who
I am?
Ask me to resign? I'm, you know, I'm so and so. I'm Bob Huggins, or you know, whatever.
Right.
So yeah, I think that may play a part in it.
Yeah, I know you mentioned that he changed his attorney. So I just wanted to speak a little bit about that and some of the confusion that may have caused, because I believe he had at least three different attorneys that represented him on this case or this matter at one time. And there seemed to be delivering some conflicting messages. So just from your perspective, how much do you think that's hurt his case in the court of public opinion and with the judge as well?
If a lawsuit is filed and he asks for reinstatement, a specific performance of his contract, a judge will have to look at the law and the judge will have to look at the facts. And to use an old, a very, very old cliche, if it walks like a duck, talks like a duck, and quacks like a duck, WVU says it's a duck, and he's saying it's not a duck, that it was something other than what it appeared to be in both his actions and his words, whether it came from his phone or his email, that's the legal issue. And beyond that, West Virginia University points out in its letter to his attorneys in Cleveland, and I have copies of both of those, is there were so many other, I mean, there are like multiple bullet points in the letter that are consistent with resignation, actions of resigning beyond, you know, the email where he used his wife's account. So that's going to be the legal and factual issue if in fact something is filed. I have no idea of knowing if it will be or not.
And as you said, he cleared out his office, turned in his badges. He kind of, you know, went through all the motions. So it's kind of
spoke
a hard case to
his team,
make.
Spoke to his team, you know, I mean, that's what you do when you leave. You speak to your team, unless you're Lane Kiffin and you get kicked off the bus and don't get a chance. But that's another.
Right. Yeah. Another,
another story.
Yeah. We'll have to hit you back up for that one. We could do a whole show there too. So what's interesting, Rusty, I think by contrast, in our estimation, and I want to see if you agree with this, because obviously we have some different perspectives as, you know, you a lawyer, us communicators. So I think we've figured out on this end that WVU's general counsel, Stephanie Abstein, has probably done equally as well as Huginside has done bad in the court of public opinion and the way they've been making comments, in that I think it seems like they've decided to just give Huggins enough rope to hang himself. They're not, they realize they didn't need to muck it up by getting into a, sorry for lack of a better term, a pissing contest with Huggins. Right. They just sort of said, listen, this is so bizarre that despite his popularity, you know, more people are siding with us. They get it. They realize that he's just taking a shot. Was that your sense as well? And do you think?
That's my sense as well. And of course, West Virginia University as a public institution and the general counsel for a public institution, you have to take the high road. You can't make personal comments. You just lay out the law and the facts. And she did an excellent job of that from the letter I read. I mean, didn't get into personalities. That's not something you would see from general counsel or any lawyer. The letter from Huggins' counsel was equally professional. I mean, nobody took shots at, you know, at the other. Both letters are well done. Just WVU has far more facts on its side than, in my opinion, than Coach Huggins does.
Yeah, and I think sometimes, you know, because we advise a lot of lawyers and law firms, and I think there's a tendency sometimes to forget the human element. Because you're used to arguing just facts and evidence, and sometimes you actually do need to, you know, smooth over the story and present it in a certain way and humanize it a little bit more. But I think this is one of those instances where you're right. It really just, the story told itself, and better to not even get in the way of it. So we kind of applaud them for having the, you know, the sense to do that.
And also, that's not saying that there wasn't a lot of emotion behind the scenes. I mean, it had to physically hurt the president of the university to have a discussion with his longtime friend and Bob Huggins about resignation. I mean, everybody involved, from the Board of Governors to the coaches to the AD department, you're talking about a family atmosphere at West Virginia University. It's a big time it's a big time university, but it's like all West Virginia, we're very much a family here. So it's not business as usual. There was a huge emotion spent on both sides of this. Rest assured.
Yeah. So we would sort of always preach that, you know, winning solves a lot of things. Now he doesn't have that vehicle to do more winning right now. Would you sense that he might try to take a year off and resurface in another part of the country and try to restore his reputation and legacy a little bit?
I don't know. I don't know. I couldn't even possibly speculate on Bob Huggins' next steps. I don't know if he's going to sue tomorrow, if he's going to go to rehab, if he's going to seek another position. I just know from everything that I've heard through social media, through official channels, is that he will not have a role at West Virginia University ever again. But, you know, never is a long time. Never is a long time. So, you know, anything's possible. I know that's a vanilla answer, but
it's fair.
I can't speculate on things, on people's minds. I just couldn't do it.
Right, right. And let's face it, he's not a young man, but we're seeing a lot of guys, you know, right, including all of our politicians who kind of like push the envelope a little bit on that front. So anything could happen. You know, I think of Bobby Knight going to Texas Tech later in his career. So, but I think he would have a chance if he could, you know, stay out of trouble to possibly restore his reputation on that front.
Listen, I hope so. For him, for his family, for West Virginia University, and for West Virginia in general. I hope he does.
Yeah, agree. Well, Rusty, thank you so much for joining us today and shedding some light on this, especially with your perspective as an athlete at West Virginia, and also obviously as an attorney in the state, a state son. It's so near and dear to your heart. So we appreciate your perspective, and thanks for joining us today.
You're welcome.
Thanks for joining us for another edition of Crisis Communications in Sports. Special thanks to our intern, Thomas Letito, our sound engineer, Connell Haggerty, and to our new sponsor, Heart and Harvest Press. Remember to follow us on Twitter at sportscoms_pod and subscribe on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you listen. Feel free to share and let us know what your thoughts are in the comments.